Chapter 38, Courtyard of the World.
As the age of reason advanced, the pattern of Western society became ever closer to that of the modern world.
After decades of turmoil, men were seeking peace and stability with more comfortable living conditions.
In 1648, the Peace of Westphalia ended the 30 Years' War, leaving Germany devastated and Spain in eclipse. But by mid-century, Cardinal Richelieu had made France the most powerful nation in Europe.
It was a time of fascination with the physical universe and the beginning of a serious study of nature. A Danish astronomer measured the speed of light, and in 1661, modern chemistry was launched with the publication of Robert Boyle's The Skeptical Chemist. The discoveries of Isaac Newton became the basis of physics for centuries to come.
It was the era of the music of Purcell, the comedies of Molière, and the fashionable preaching of Bossuet.
George Fox founded the Society of Friends, known as Quakers. One of these, a tinker's son named John Bunyan, wrote a book in prison. His Pilgrim's Progress became a bestseller.
Good works abounded. The schools of the Christian Brothers were started, and in 1680, St. Vincent de Paul founded the Sisters of Charity to work among the poor.
1666 was a fateful year for the city of London, almost totally destroyed by the Great Fire, following on the plague. London was rebuilt, and disaster proved an opportunity for Christopher Wren, who designed his masterpiece, the new St. Paul's Cathedral.
In Rome, there was excitement at the arrival of Queen Christina of Sweden, a recent convert to Catholicism.
The Roman nobility feted the eccentric ex-queen, and Bernini was employed to decorate the Porta del Popolo in her honour.
To the pilgrim of today, St. Peter's Basilica without St. Peter's Square would seem like an unfinished symphony. But in the mid-17th century, that was just what it was. Then Pope Alexander VII commissioned Bernini to decorate the space in front of the church with a colonnade, and Bernini, it said, had a dream.
He saw the Redeemer in the shape of the basilica, arms outspread as if embracing the whole of mankind. Bernini's drawing shows a huge human figure laid on the ground. The head is the dome, the arms the colonnade. Arms, wrote Bernini, which embrace Catholics to reinforce their faith, heretics to reunite them with the church, and agnostics to enlighten them with the true faith.
Bernini's plan for St. Peter's Square was both practical and aesthetic. He wanted to create a large open area where thousands of people could gather to receive the Pope's blessing. The colonnade was begun in 1657 and completed within the decade.
Bernini's first commission in St. Peter's was in 1624, his last in 1678. In those 54 years, he worked everywhere in the basilica except on the ceiling. More than any other architect, he was able to envisage the impression St. Peter's could give the visitor.
Bernini's idea was that the pilgrim should see St. Peter's in the distance like a vision. He remodeled the bridge of Sant'Angelo, lowering the parapets so that people could see St. Peter's dome about half a mile to the west. Once he'd crossed the bridge, the pilgrim turned left into the dark street of the Borgo, emerging at last into the vastness of St. Peter's Square.
Once inside the church, he would be drawn to the great canopy in the centre, through which he would see at the far end of the 600-foot nave the ornate Cathedra Petri, the ancient wooden chair said to have belonged to St. Peter, encased in bronze and suspended high above the floor of the apse. Behind, the golden western window of the Holy Spirit completed the vision.
The last master architect of St. Peter's lived to be over 80 and served 8 popes. His greatest patron was Urban VIII, who sent for the artist after his election, saying, "It's your great good luck to see Barberini pope, but we're even luckier that Bernini is alive during our pontificate." Urban loved to watch his friend at work, and when Bernini made a self-portrait, it was the Pope who held the mirror.
Born in 1598, Gian Lorenzo Bernini typified the new mood of relief in the church following on the somber decades of the Reformation. Flamboyant and extrovert, he's been described as the brilliant son of a successful father, sophisticated, assured, master of rich spectacular effect.
A man of short stature but well-proportioned, thin rather than fat, and of a fiery temperament. So wrote Chanteloup, Bernini's companion in France. stern by nature, steady in his work, passionate in his wrath. That was how his son saw him.
If he were alive today, Bernini would probably be a film director. He had a gift for the overall effect, both in architecture and sculpture. He knew how to convey emotion. All his sculptured figures are vibrant with life. They seem to have been caught by the camera in mid-conversation. As a modern critic has said, he brought a sense of time to sculpture. He used the moment of climax because he believed that it was in such moments that truth was revealed.
Bernini loved to involve the spectator, and in his theatrical productions, he would cheerfully create the illusion that the theatre was on fire or about to be flooded. When he used spectacle, it was always with a purpose, not for its own sake, but to involve the viewer.
Bernini was nothing if not versatile. He illustrated a book of poems by Urban VIII. He drew amusing cartoons of ecclesiastics and other public figures. He created perishable decorations for special occasions.
Bernini was not only a successful artist, he was a deeply religious man. He was particularly close to the Jesuits, always carried a copy of the Exercises of St. Ignatius with him, and for years walked daily to the Church of the Gesù in Rome, where Ignatius is buried. Bernini believed that his ideas were heaven-sent, and that he, like other Christians, should use his talents for the greater glory of God.
If he had never done anything else, Bernini would surely be remembered as the man who filled Rome with beautiful fountains. And none more graceful than the well-known Roman landmark, the Fountain of the Four Rivers in Piazza Navona. The rivers are the Danube, the Ganges, the Nile, and the Rio de la Plata, representing Europe, Asia, Africa, and America. A Roman legend recounts that the figure of the Rio de la Plata is shielding its face from the Church of St. Agnes opposite, designed by Bernini's rival, the moody genius Francesco Borromini. Bernini, too, had his grumpy moments, but he loved a practical joke. His biographer, Filippo Baldinucci, recounts an episode which occurred during the building of the fountain.
One morning, the Pope arrived and entered the enclosure with Cardinal Panzirolo, his Secretary of State, and about 50 of his closest confidants. He remained there more than an hour and a half, enjoying himself greatly. Since the water had not yet been turned on, the Pope asked Bernini when it would be possible to see it fall. Bernini replied that he could not say on such short notice, since some time was required to put everything in order. The pontiff then gave him his benediction and turned toward the door to leave. He had not yet gone out of the enclosure when he heard a loud sound of water. Turning back, he saw it gush forth on all sides in great abundance. Bernini had, at the crucial moment, given a certain signal to the person whose job it was to open the water ducts. Overcome by such originality and gladdened by so beautiful a sight, the Pope returned with his whole court. Turning to the artist, he exclaimed, "In giving us this unexpected joy, Bernini, you have added 10 years to our life." As a greater sign of his pleasure, the Pope sent for 100 doubloons to be quickly distributed to the men engaged in work on the fountain. Thank you.